Throughout history, suppression of revolutionary energy technologies points to a pattern of inventors meeting untimely or suspicious ends, apparently protecting entrenched interests in the fossil fuel narrative and traditional power systems. Nikola Tesla, who died in poverty amid claims of suppressed wireless energy transmission ideas. Tom Ogle, whose vapor fuel system promised extraordinary mileage before his 1981 death from an overdose ruled accidental or suicidal, and Stanley Meyer, developer of a controversial water fuel cell, who perished in 1998 from a cerebral aneurysm despite persistent poisoning rumors.
He has developed what's called a water fuel cell. It has taken the place of his old gas tank. The water fuel cell breaks down water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. The hydrogen is used to run his dune buggy.
I don't care if you use rainwater, well water, city water, ocean water. If you don't have any fresh water, go ahead and use snow. If you don't have any snow available to you, then use salt water because there's no adverse effect to the fuel cell.
Meyer started working on this project 4 years ago. He's not a scientist. He isn't even a chemist. In fact, he never graduated from college. Meyer was determined, he says, to design something to protect this country from oil embargoes.
And we have calculated that if we take the dune buggy from Los Angeles to New York, we would roughly use 22 gallons of water.
The Pentagon flew a lieutenant colonel in last week to look at Meyer's invention. There's talk of possibly using it in the Star Wars defense program and to run army tanks.
Recently, Aaron Salter Jr., a retired police officer working as a security guard at a Tops grocery store in Buffalo, New York, was passionately developing a hydrogen electrolysis system to power vehicles with water as an alternative to gasoline.
You got your hydrogen for your electrolysis, you got your batteries, your water. I'm just going to start it.
And that's the gas valve in the rear. It's in off position. And the vehicle is running on pure hydrogen.
He was tragically killed in the 2022 racially motivated mass shooting at that store.
The defendant's planning of a racially motivated attack occurred over a span of several months.
And just a mere days ago, on December 15th, 2025, Nuno Lorero, a distinguished MIT professor and director of the Plasma Science and Fusion Center, specializing in fusion energy, a potentially limitless clean power source, was fatally shot in his Brookline home.
Many of you know that fusion is the process that powers stars. So the reason that they shine is because at their very core, there are fusion reactions going on that essentially release the energy that keeps the stars alive and shining. We speak of the plasma state of matter as the word that best describes the state at which the matter is at these very high pressures and temperatures that you find in the core of stars, such as the sun. And so essentially, in a sort of a slogan, kind of way, what we're trying to do at the Plasma Science and Fusion Center is to recreate star-like conditions on Earth, aiming to tap that energy, the fusion energy, for electricity or energy production. In case there's questions about why we're trying to do this, there's a long list of reasons that range from no polluting emissions to inexhaustible fuel supply, very energetic reactions, so 10 to the 7 more energetic than a chemical reaction, no risk of meltdowns or long-lived nuclear waste, civilization-scale energy, and flexibility to generate fusion energy pretty much anywhere.
Apparently, a janitor named Derek, who worked as a janitor at Brown University, had previously, that is before the shooting, according to him, alerted the Brown University police that there was an intruder that had been lurking around the building, but yet nothing was done. We also learned that there were a number of electronic devices discovered in the storage unit that he had, and a number of other things, perhaps thumb drives that he had, all of which point to the idea that this was some elaborate plot. He did a lot of casing, a lot of pre-planning, a lot of recon.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. The established families, dug in for centuries with their iron grip around the throat of humanity, will never relinquish control. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it's reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Jumping on board with us today. A lot happening over here, of course, specifically with the holiday season. I know. Well, President Trump's in the White House. We could say Merry Christmas. But there are some people who claim to celebrate a holiday known as Kwanzaa. And it really had me scratching my head because I never knew of a holiday before. And then I quickly learned that it's actually just not even real. Joining me to discuss is none other than Harrison Smith. He is here to break down the, I'll say it's the myth that is Kwanzaa.
The myth of Kwanzaa, exactly.
Yeah, and you're also the host of War Room, I should disclose as well.
I am. Merry Christmas. I've noticed people are saying Merry Christmas more. Do you think that's just because I'm a Christmassy type of guy, so they say it to me? Or do you think that's a real thing, people are saying Christmas more?
I think it's a real thing, and I feel like we're kind of, I've been applying public pressure every time someone turns to me and says, happy holiday, like, give him like the eye
look.
You
look him in the eye. It's Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Trump's president.
it's like the trans people. It's ma'am. It's Merry Christmas. Well, we know that the war on Christmas has been real. It's been going on for a while. They like to pretend it's not, but we're going to launch a counterattack now. We're going to launch a war on Kwanzaa. And, you know, I was talking, and when normal people hear me say this, normal people like my wife, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going in early tomorrow. I'm going to go on American Journal. She's like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm going to destroy Kwanzaa. And she's like, why? Like, what are you talking? Because they have this idea that it's like a religious thing, that it's like some deeply held spiritual practice. It's not. It was literally invented in the 1960s by a radical communist black separatist because he wanted to destroy black people's love of Christianity because he saw it as an outgrowth of capitalism in America, and he hated both of those things. So it's not spiritual. It's not valid in any way. He just took a bunch of Swahili names, Swahili words, and made up things and then put it to a mockery of Hanukkah and called it a religion. Now, there's a classic article from this that people repost just about every year from Ann Coulter called Kwanzaa is a Holiday Made Up by the FBI. And she basically runs this guy, Ron Karenga, who's the guy who invented Kwanzaa, a.k.a. Dr. Maulana Karenga, founder of the United Slaves, which was a violent nationalist rival to the Black Panthers, invented this in the 1960s basically at the behest of the FBI or under the purview of the FBI. But yeah, it's all literally just a radical communist anti-American practice that was supposed to, play into this idea that like, oh, you're reclaiming your heritage, you're reclaiming your history, Africa, the homeland, the motherland, and, you want to reconnect with your spiritual past. So it's playing on something that's like really deeply human and emotional, like you want to be connected to your past. But it's all just bullcrap. It's just a lie. It's just nonsense. And it's anti-Christian, which I think is particularly ridiculous. And you can read the guy's writings. I mean, he actually hated Christianity. He wanted to destroy Christianity. He wanted to, create something for black people in America to break away from Christianity because he saw it as like the, European oppressor religion, which it's all just communist hogwash anyway. Mm-hmm. But also, then you go and you've got articles like this. African Christianity thrived long before white men arrived. So Africa was Christian long before Europe was. Ethiopia had some of the earliest Christian communities. Many of the earliest saints are Christian. Some of my favorite, King Caleb is one of the coolest saints of all time. And we don't have to get into that right now. But the point is that, like, it's ridiculous to claim that Christianity was somehow foisted on these, you know, the poor slaves, and it was used to keep them enslaved. I mean, that's the idea that's being perpetuated by the people who created Kwanzaa, when the reality is that, you know, Christianity was, you know, one of the greatest things that ever happened to the African-American community, and the African-American community is much more strongly Christian than other, you know, racial communities in this country. And Kwanzaa is a deliberate attempt to weaken that connection by claiming that Christianity is somehow European and white and therefore racist and capitalist and bad and has to be overthrown, when the reality is Christianity has a longer history in Africa than it does in America. And if black people want to connect to their history, that would be a great place to start. So what else do you want to know about Kwanzaa? Because I've been doing the research, and it's literally just nothing. But I do want to say that, like, I don't know, maybe in the African American community people actually do celebrate Kwanzaa. I kind of have a hard time believing that. I've never heard anybody celebrate Kwanzaa.
Well,
it's like the joke that, like, you know, I always think of the Futurama clip when there's the Santa robot and the Hanukkah robot and the Kwanzaa robot, and the Kwanzaa robot just goes around handing out a book called What the Hell is Kwanzaa? Because nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. But if you do have this, I don't mean to be insulting. Like, I understand the idea to, like, want to reach back into your past and see. But, like, that's, you know, Christmas does that. Christmas already has that aspect. The Christmas tree, the Yule log, like, these are kind of like pagan traditions that were incorporated into the Christian ceremony, and sort of their meanings were made to comport with Christianity rather than their pagan roots. Like, you can do that with Africa. Why not? Take some of the African traditions and incorporate them into Christianity, into the Christmas tradition, if that's what you want to do. But to create this other holiday, this fake harvest festival holiday in the middle of winter, like, it literally makes no sense. And is completely ridiculous and spiritually bankrupt and a communist plot. So that's what
Kwanzaa is. And that's just putting
it
nicely.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harrison, I laugh about this, but, you know, Kamala Harris, when she was trying to win over voters, was running around the country trying to convince them that she was black enough for their vote, would tell them all. There's a soundbite of where she's going over her traditions of celebrating Kwanzaa with her family and her uncles. And she's got this whole illustration of what happened during Kwanzaa. And it just didn't make any sense, because it sounded like, as she's talking about it, that she's building up this story that she's just now created in her head,
right,
and manifesting it into speech, I guess. It was pretty concerning that she was able to do all of this. But here's my question for you: when did this go mainstream? Because I remember going to elementary school, which wasn't that long ago, or in '90s, this wasn't a thing until I got to,
you,
like,
didn't
high
have
school.
This as a thing?
No, we had a lot of black Americans in our school.
That's interesting. See, yeah. everybody has a different experience with Kwanzaa. I remember it in elementary school, and then I feel like it sort of faded away or went away. Darn it, I meant to start this segment with a great joke, confusing Kwanzaa with Kazaa. The moment's passed, but I was going to start by being like, well, it's a file sharing operation that predated LimeWire, yeah, just because literally nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. Yeah, it started in 1966 is when the guy came up with it. He'd apparently invented they call them the principles. Ngozi Saba, the seven principles. So this would actually be a great thing to ask Kamala Harris, because I would bet every dollar I've ever earned that she could not name the seven principles of Ngozi Saba. And that would really put the lie to her saying that she celebrates it. I mean, I can't believe that didn't work. So she tried to pander to the African-American community by relating her Kwanzaa tradition she held with her family.
So bad.
And all
and
the black
about,
people
like,
in America
candle.
Are like,
yeah, it was bad.
What is Kwanzaa? What are you even talking about? Yeah, so there's these like seven vague ideas of togetherness that this guy basically made up himself. And, you know, I was researching this and going, well, do these values, do these principles come from anything? And it's just like, no, they're just Swahili words, basically, that this guy decided made a vague sort of pan-African philosophy, theology mindset. And it just means absolutely nothing, but it's all collectivism. It's all, you know, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility. So that's one of the things they celebrate is collective responsibility, cooperative economics. It's literally just communism. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. It's not African. It's just communism. And so there's like three color candles and they mean something. I really have a hard time, like, giving any credence to this whatsoever. Again,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe people have been tricked into thinking there's some sort of spiritual significance with Kwanzaa, but it is
It is like the most baby language religion ever, where it's just like, we're going to make religion and it's going to be about unity and togetherness and power. And it's like, what does any of this mean? This doesn't mean anything. This is all nonsense. And just because you put an African word to it doesn't imbue it with some sort of intelligence. And again, the whole point of this, it's not like they created Kwanzaa as a standalone celebration just to celebrate African-Americans or African history. It is literally, it was an attack on Christianity. Karenga created Kwanzaa to give African Americans an opportunity to celebrate themselves and their history rather than simply imitate the practice of the dominant society, i.e. mainstream American holidays dominated by Christmas. Again, you don't think they celebrate Christmas in Africa? You don't think they celebrate Christmas in Ethiopia or some of the oldest Christian communities live?
Yeah.
It's what we, you know, see now where they basically take something good. They say, oh, that's a negative outgrowth of white supremacy. And then so they try to demonize the good thing by associating it with white people who they've already effectively demonized. So, you know, whether it's like the freedom of association or, you know, all these wonderful morals that we have, they go, those are imposed by white people. You should be irresponsible and mean. And so you're far away from the white people. They did the same thing with Christianity. Oh, that's a white people's religion. We're going to draw you away from Christianity to help you connect with your roots. And it's like, what? He described Christianity as a, quote, white religion that black people should shun, and reportedly called Jesus psychotic. Kwanzaa was designed as a secular non-Christian holiday emphasizing African heritage and communitarian values. Yeah, don't say communist, say communitarian, as if that's tricking anybody. We see through you, pinko. Oh, and I should also mention that this guy, like, went to prison for a long time for beating and imprisoning women. So,
that just adds up.
I'm not sure which candle on the Kwanzaa menorah the beating and raping women would be, but
if he was still here, Kamala Harris would raise his bail money for him.
Probably so. Yeah, he'd probably have a, you know, position on her cabinet if she ever got into office.
It's pure insanity that we've normalized this, but. You know, I was just recently in Grapevine, Texas. I was just at the Christmas market that they have there. It's beautiful. They actually call it the capital of Texas. As a person who's just moved to Texas, I'm now learning about this. But it was kind of sad because although it's beautiful, we now have this issue here where people who are not or are trying to disassociate religion, Christianity, with Christmas have now infiltrated and they've taken over. And so while I'm walking around, there's tons of just Muslims walking around, and it's not just here in Texas. We see it throughout Europe, too, Germany and other places. You know, so many countries now can't even have Christmas markets anymore because of the threat of Islamic terrorism that looms over them. I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, taking Christ out of Christmas, and let you kind of like dive into that angle of all of this, because obviously that was the goal of this, was to do just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we started off by sort of joking about the war on Christmas, and I remember being, you know, a high schooler ever watching The Daily Show or, you know, whatever liberal nonsense was on MTV, and just hearing this idea of like the war on Christmas, like, okay, sorry, dude, the Starbucks coffee cup is red. Like, who really cares?
Yeah.
But then you get older, you get wiser, you start looking into things, you're like, wait, they are literally attacking Christmas, like very deliberately and a very sort of blatant, and have been for a long time. Again, Kwanzaa started in the 60s as literally an assault on Christmas, as an alternative to Christmas. But, you know, it goes back even farther than that. And I think people this year, it's sort of every year, it's sort of interesting. We have like every year Christmas comes around, and every year people like realize, oh, all these Christmas songs don't talk about Jesus, huh? That's kind of weird. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time, this idea of like drawing Christmas away from its original intention. Obviously, you watch the Peanuts cartoon from the 1950s, and it's about how Christmas is being too commercialized and merchandise, and, you know, it's lost the spirit of the age. So I think Christmas has had a constant struggle with this, and, you know, we're sort of always stuck between like this sort of imagined history where everything was wholesome and wonderful and good. And certainly there are aspects of that. Like, you know, I'm not one of these people that's like, Norman Rockwell never existed. Like, no, Norman Rockwell painted the world around him. That's what America looked like back then. It was a Norman Rockwell type of world. But at the same time, the celebrations of Christmas used to just be like drunken carousing. Like the big thing in America in like the 1800s, Christmas was you go to New York and you get drunk and you have a big parade. And I mean, it was still wholesome because, you know, it was It was eggnog. It was jolly. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, hooligans destroying things. But it wasn't also, you know, it didn't have the vibe that Christmas now has of a quiet, your family. And so, you know, Christmas has changed over the years. That's fine, right? It's then like, you know, the Coca-Cola company basically creates the modern Santa Claus. And we sort of adopt that. And, you know, people don't like that. But anyway, regardless, I think the deliberate attempt to not just pull Christmas away from Christianity, but also just like not celebrate Christmas as much, not worry about the decorations. Because that's one thing that struck me probably 10 years ago is going to Washington, D.C. in June. Not sure if you know what June is. If you went to Washington, D.C. in June, you would know because there were rainbows everywhere. Oh. And I remember driving around D.C. and going,
yes,
this is more decorations than Christmas. It literally, their pride decorations were more all-encompassing. The churches, but every restaurant had, you know, big rainbow banners and flyers and just it was everywhere. And it was I just looked around and went, wait, this is way more decoration than they do for Christmas. They'll put up a wreath and that's it, right? They'll put lights on one tree, you know, and they'll turn them on for Christmas. But it's like they go all out for pride. So, like, these are things that we as a society use as, like, touchstones of, like, what do we care about? You know, what do we define ourselves by? And I feel like as we move away from, you know, going all out for Christmas and decorating, you know, every street pole and every flagpole in town, as I remember growing up, now it's like, well, we only have, you know, budget for decorations, and we really got to prioritize pride this year. And so I think it's a, you know, it's sort of a symbol of where we're going as a country, and it's a hell of a lot less fun, in my opinion.
No, it is. It's definitely getting there, and it's a little infuriating to sit back and watch. But I mean, you're obviously raising a young family. How do you push back on all of this? Because, I mean, the propaganda is real, and I don't think people realize it. We've been infiltrated completely.
Yeah. That's a good question. How do you push back on it? I mean, I don't know. My kids are so young. It's kind of like it kind of doesn't matter quite yet. I mean, it matters still.
Yeah, you can build them up an environment.
You know? Yeah. But, you know, it's like we read the Advent story every single night and my 2-year-old still doesn't quite know who Mary is. So it's like, you know, it's like, well, how much is, you know, it really going to matter if she's watching The Grinch rather than, you know, hearing a Bible story? Is it really that big of a deal? You know, I think that your kids learn a lot more from observation than instruction. Mm-hmm. So I think what I try to do is just like, you know, through your action, just show like, you know, faithfulness and that you take praying seriously and that you close your eyes and bow your head. And I think that stuff actually matters more because they get a sense of like what you actually value through your actions. And I think that's personally sort of, I don't know. I try not to like beat my kids over the head with like, I don't know, like let them have fun. I want them to love Christmas. Like my son loves Grinch. Okay, fine. It wouldn't be my first choice, you know, of like instruction thing, but whatever. He's a green goblin that looks funny. Great. He loves Rudolph. Okay. It's not really a Christmas story, but who doesn't love Yukon Cornelius? Who doesn't love the abominable snowman? Who doesn't love a 2-year-old trying to say the word abominable?
So, I still can't do it.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think that as long as you have like the your core values inside your family, and that sort of thing is that like you can't get that from outside. It's nice to have a society and to have a culture that uplifts that and upholds that and makes it easy, you know, to celebrate those things. But that's not where you seek it out. That's generated inside your family, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's the case. I mean, my family, I mean, this is the problem with, okay, it's not the problem because my parents are probably watching. But growing up, I'm one of seven. And so.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're a squad. 6 girls, 1 boy.
Whoa.
And I gave my brother heck.
Yeah, I bet.
He's traumatized this day.
I had 2 sisters. That was hard enough.
Yeah, but we celebrated Christmas, but we never had the religious context of any of it. And so as I've gotten older, I've learned more and obviously have started reading the Bible and stuff like that. I'm just like, man, the advantages to growing up like this is just it defies everything else that you see in the outside world. And I think children who don't grow up with the context and kind of the vision of everything through the Bible, I think you totally have lost out big time there, because everything, every way you're supposed to live your life is definitely written out for you, whether you choose to do so or not. So for me, it's always like, man, I think that we should be teaching every kid this, get rid of this Marxist nonsense where we push this fake religion onto people, remind them that Christmas is celebrated for the reason that we all know it is celebrated, not for this fictional characters that we like to make up and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a little discouraging seeing. But, you know, it's not just us here in the United States who are dealing with this. Throughout Europe, I mean, we're sitting here watching back as multiple Christmas markets were dealing with the ISIS threats. And you see them getting foiled, obviously. But gosh, we saw one get carried out a couple of years ago. I think it was a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Oh, every year. Yeah, basically every year. I think multiple Christmas markets have been attacked this year. And yeah, some places are just not doing them anymore. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's extending to New Year's Eve. Like, they're not doing New Year's Eve on the Champs-Élysées. They're not doing New Year's Eve in Melbourne. So, you know, it's actually even a bigger problem. Like, obviously, they target Christmas markets on purpose for that. But it's like, okay, you're giving up your ability to gather in large groups. Like, that's crazy. That's actually crazy. Yeah. You know, the religious connection and, you know, the message of that, I always find it interesting because, again, having kids and then having to explain it to them, you sort of understand things yourself for the first time a lot. And, you know, a lot of people make a lot of the idea of like, oh, Christianity is just this imposition on a pagan holiday. It's about the winter solstice. And you have this, you know, the connection to the Norse celebrations, to the Christmas tree and the Yule log and all this stuff. But it's like, do you understand that's because like the Jesus story in a weird way is like reflected in the natural cycles and in life? Like, I remember talking about Easter with my son last year. And, you know, he's like, why do we celebrate Jesus's resurrection with like eggs and bunnies? Like, it doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Yeah. People can make a lot of hay of that going, it's a pagan celebration. But it's like, well, what happened? Like, every year the earth dies in winter and is reborn in spring. That's what is symbolized by Jesus Christ dying and being reborn. The winter solstice is, you know, the darkest time. And then, you know, the rebirth and things get brighter and the days longer from then on out. So there's this like, to me, that's not some sort of, you know, weird, like, paganistic, oh, you're celebrating the stars, or like, you know, you just think you're celebrating Jesus, really, you're celebrating Venus or whatever. It's like, no, it's connecting the spiritual world with the physical world and the very deep connections there that exist and are, like, exemplified and modeled by Jesus, starting with Christmas, him being born and dying and resurrecting in Easter. These are, like, reflections of the natural world in a really, like, profound and meaningful way, not in like a, I don't know, cultural appropriation way.
Yeah, well, we have about 30 seconds. How do we get rid of Kwanzaa and stop people from pretending? Okay, we don't have to get rid of them completely, but you said you were going to destroy them. Or destroy it, the holiday, I should say.
I think you already figured it out. We need to stop the government from pushing it. I'm like 100% sure the vast majority of Kwanzaa is celebrated in elementary schools and middle schools around the country and nowhere else. I think if we stop pushing this through the education system, nobody will ever have to hear about it ever again. It'll be a cultural artifact. 20 years from now, people will go, remember Kwanzaa? And the other people will go, no. And that'll be the history of Kwanzaa.
Yeah, well, that's what we should start working on because we got to get that done. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a second. I wanted to remind our audience that over at thealexjonesstore.com right now, we just launched the Ultimate Power. If you're someone looking to boost your energy, focus, blood flow, or endurance, this formula is for you. You got to head on over to the shop right now because, folks, the more you buy, the more you save. If you buy 3 bottles, you get 30% off, 2 bottles, 20% off, and then a bottle, you get 10% off. But most importantly, folks, this is going to give you natural caffeine, which we could all use. It's about 100 milligrams, the equivalent to one cup of coffee without that mid-afternoon crash, which is very important. And the vitamins in this are what keep you going, B12 and B6 as well. And just going to throw this in there as well. Every purchase you get or you make over at the Alex Jones store, specifically on this, you get 100 entries to win that Ford Raptor plus 100. Gosh, I keep adding extra money to this. $10,000 cash. That's $10,000 cash over at thealexjonesstore.com. So head on over right now to the shop. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a little bit. And man, oh man, is about to get good.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at theolivestore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue, that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking methylene blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast. Keep us on air while you get great products. And it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operations, the true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. It's good to have you guys here. Harrison Smith joining us, and he was just saying the introduction. It feels kind of weird that his name's not playing.
American Journal with Brianna Morello. What?
Well, listen, Harrison, if you want your morning slot back, I won't fight you.
Please.
I don't mind sleeping in.
I hardly made it in at 10 a.m. today. I woke up at 9:30 like, oh, crap. You got to get in.
Dang it. I thought I was going to sell you on this.
No way, man. No, I do. I miss this crew. I miss this studio quite a bit. I miss this audience. You know, people don't they get, you know, they listen in the morning and they don't follow you in the afternoon. That's what I'm learning.
Oh.
It's okay. It's all right.
They join. Make sure you guys join him on the War Room every day, okay?
I miss you guys.
He misses you. And then call in.
Yeah.
And give him some advice.
Yeah, please.
Unsolicited help. Advice. Harris, I want to get into this because we're getting more and more documents. We're kind of here at InfoWars. We're sifting through the document dump that just happened by the DOJ early this morning, of course. It was about 7 in the morning when they dropped thousands of documents regarding some of them. President Trump is in these documents as well as others. And so, you know, you and I were going to go back and forth on what we're learning in all of this. I guess we could go to the first one in regards to the documents that were being sent back and forth regarding the Black Book. Now, This is the interesting part, right? Because it's kind of confusing, right? We know that there's a Black Book that has been made public record. But in regards to all of this, the FBI is passing it around, specifically the Human Trafficking Division, back in 2019. They were passing around an unredacted version. Now, again, the reason why I was like, wait a minute, hold on, this sounds quite strange, because I don't remember we were ever told about this. It could be confused for the client list. We don't have an actual client list. But how is the FBI and the DOJ unable to formulate an actual client list when they have the Black Book itself, the flight logs? I mean, they had all these PDFs they were shipping back and forth. And even in one of these emails, I mean, the Palm Beach police report, and then you have Pam Bondi, who came out back in July and told us that, oh no, we don't actually have a client list, but this is all you'd really need to make a client list, right?
Yeah, the problem the FBI has is that they're lying. of course they know. I mean, look, it's not just the client list. They had hard drives and videos and the blackmail, the photographs. Like, the verbiage here is imprecise, right? So it's like, there is no list. And it's like, well, there's a Black Book. There's an address book with all the people that he knew. Were they all clients? Not necessarily. So, yeah, okay, there isn't a list that Jeffrey Epstein put out on Word document that says, like, my clients and their proclivities, right? Like, that doesn't exist. But we know who he went around with, and we know who he provided services to, so you can make a list out of that. The redactions are not helpful. In fact, they're actually like providing less clarity. There are things like a lot of the contact book, the address book that's been released recently, had already been released before, but had been released unredacted before. And so one example people are posting is it'll say like Michael Jackson, and in the latest release, it's Michael Jackson and then a big black box. And so it makes it look like it's Michael Jackson's information there. In the unredacted version that came out years ago, it says Michael Jackson. And then under it, his contact info is for like his lawyer. And it's, you know, it's not Michael Jackson's contact info. It's Michael Jackson's professional, you know, agent's info or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are little subtleties like that where, okay, the insinuation is this is Michael Jackson's personal information in this list. But in reality, it was a professional contact. So, I mean, obviously, there's pictures of Michael Jackson. They were together. But that's just an example of how, like, we're actually getting less clarity as these things are being released. Yeah. We're actually – it's becoming more difficult to sort of get your finger on exactly who was doing what when. So, you know, they're making the most out of this release. And at this point, with so many of these things, like, our system is so corrupt. It's so impenetrable at this point. You kind of have to just – assume everything is true and untrue at the same time. It exists and it doesn't exist. It's like we're in Schrodinger's reality where we haven't opened the box. The cat is dead and alive at the same time. And that's just how you have to approach the world. You consider the same thing with like Charlie Kirk and all the suspicions about who really killed him. It's like we know through our official organs we will never get the truth. We're never going to get a fully fledged, unredacted, uncensored, truthful, you know, recitation of Jeffrey Epstein, who he was, what he did, and who he was working for. We're just never going to get that ever. We can get hints at that. We can get close to that. But, you know, I've been saying for years, it's like the Epstein list, we're never getting it. It doesn't exist. If we do get it, it won't be the real thing. It's just, you know, maybe there's a Rolodex somewhere in some vault in an FBI safe house, or maybe it was picked up by an agent and squirreled away somewhere. But we're never going to get it. And what we do get is going to be designed to be released by the people in power in order to progress a certain idea, whether that's the factual information in the list or they're going to block out information to give a different impression. You have to just approach this with the idea that everybody is lying about everything the entire time. And knowing that and understanding that, you can still get to the truth through the lies. You can still glean information in reality from all the deception, but you don't take absolutely anything at face value.
Yeah, and I think that's what President Trump was trying to do. He's referred to this as a hoax, and obviously that's not the proper way to describe any of this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely not a hoax. There's definitely a ton of victims out there, and they were not appreciative of those comments. But yesterday, he kind of got me fired up because there was a clip. We're going to play clip four for you in a second because he was talking, and he was asked specifically about the Clinton photos that were populating online.
Yeah, that his response was weird.
Very weird. And yeah. Then all of a sudden, the next day, these Trump documents are released in the next latest dump, and the DOJ putting out a disclaimer saying, hey, these were politically motivated. And I don't doubt that. I just don't like his response. Take a listen.
Were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And can you commit to their
by
full...
What?
And were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And can you commit to their full release by the end of the year? Some of the victims were protesting that too many of them were redacted.
I know. There are a lot of people that are angry about all of the pictures of other people, you know, but I think it's terrible. Look, I don't like I like Bill Clinton. I've always gotten along with Bill Clinton. I've been nice to him. He's been nice to me. We've always gotten along. Respect him. I hate to see photos come out of him, but this is what the Democrats, mostly Democrats, and a couple of bad Republicans are asking for. So they're giving their photos of me, too. Everybody was friendly with this guy, either friendly or not friendly, but they were, you know, he was around, he was all over Palm Beach and other places. The head of Harvard was his best friend, Larry Summers. And Bill Clinton was a friend of his, but everybody was. I actually threw him out of Mar-a-Lago. And as a person that was in Mar-a-Lago, I threw him out. This is Mar-a-Lago. It's the hottest place in, I think it's the hottest place in the world, but it's the hottest place in Florida. And everybody would come here, he'd come here. We actually threw him out. But no, I don't like the pictures of Bill Clinton being shown. I don't like the pictures of other people being shown. I think it's a terrible thing. I think Bill Clinton's a big boy. He can handle it. But you probably have pictures being exposed of other people that innocently met Jeffrey Epstein years ago, many years ago. And they're, you know, highly respected bankers and lawyers and others. And they'll end up because of guys like Massey, who's a real lowlife, whose polls are down to about 9%, by the way, in the great state of Kentucky. If you look at Kentucky, Kentucky is such a great place, but I don't know. They've got a couple of people in there that are very strange in terms of leadership. But Massey's a loser, and he likes it, and that he works with the Democrats. He's just being used by the Democrats, because what this whole thing is with Epstein is a way of trying to deflect from the tremendous success that the Republican Party has. Like, for instance, today we're building the biggest ships in the world.
He's making this all about Massey, just such a strange way to go about this. All Massey's doing is advocating for sex crimes victims. And yes, I understand it's feeding into the left. They all wanted to push for this, and they suddenly all went away when they realized that there was really nothing to see here. But your reaction to him referring to Clinton as someone he highly respects, even though the images that are coming out have redacted faces of the victims, well, we're told victims are redacted, of girls who we don't know their age, but they definitely don't look a day over 25 from the bodies alone. And they're just sitting and hanging out with Bill Clinton, the guy he respects.
You know, I don't know what to make of it. We played that clip when it first broke on War Room yesterday.
Yeah.
But only the first half. And I'm sitting here being like, how could this get any worse? And then he goes into Thomas Massey, and it's like, oh, what? Like, yeah, throw that in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder why. That's just an interesting overlap. Like, it is interesting that we've got, you know, all these like political beefs between Massey and MAGA. It's mostly centered around Israel, which, of course, is who I think Jeffrey Epstein was working for. So, you know, it all goes back to that. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it for a couple reasons. One, because Bill Clinton was Jeffrey Epstein's best friend. Like, there are all these articles these days going, Jeffrey Epstein called Donald Trump his best friend. It's like, yeah, after Trump was president and he just arrested Epstein, and Epstein was working with, you know, a fellow anti-Trumper to be like, what can, you know, hey, you're a disgraced pedophile. Let's associate you with Trump. Like, real sophisticated psyop there. Real sophisticated psyop you have going there. But, like, Donald Trump was one of the first people to call this out. We played the clip last week on War Room. Donald Trump in 2015 being asked about Epstein, and just without reservation, this was before he was the candidate, before he was the nominee for the Republican Party, and he goes, oh, Epstein, he was a bad dude. That island, there was some weird stuff that happened on that island. You should ask Prince Andrew about that. Right? Just like, that was his response. Mm-hmm. Totally open. He didn't try to cover it up. So, I mean, the idea that this was somehow pushed by the Democrats. This is a beast entirely of Trump's own making. So that doesn't even make sense. It's almost like a almost had like a flashback to 2016 where it's like Trump is treating these people in a way that he wants to be treated. He's actually being very Christian in a weird way, but he's got this idea of like Bill Clinton was the president. I will respect the office of the presidency. Then when I'm president, they will respect the office of the presidency. And it's like, dude, it's been 10 years. How can you still think that's the case? Like, what is going on? How does he not understand? Or is he just trying to cover it up because he's going, oh, if I make a big deal out of this, it'll look hypocritical when my name's in it. I'm sure that's part of it, too. But why doesn't he just go for the jugular? Why doesn't he just go, Bill Clinton's all over this. He's a scumbag. He's a dirtbag. His wife made up the Russia hoax. I mean, Clinton, the Clintons, have done more damage to Donald Trump, have caused him more pain, more grief, more suffering than maybe any other group of people. And he's sitting there defending Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Make it make sense. I don't get it. I don't understand why he would defend this. And there's a couple things to this. For one, when investigators would ask Epstein's victims about who else was involved, they wouldn't say like, you know, you were with Jeffrey Epstein. Was Bill Clinton ever there? Right. They weren't asking them leading questions. They would simply ask the open-ended question. We're looking at Jeffrey Epstein. Who else should we look at? Who else was involved in this? And like four of them immediately said Bill Clinton. Not in like what other big American politicians are in on this. Just the open-ended question. Who was second to Jeffrey Epstein in this operation? And the victims themselves answered, apropos of nothing, Bill Clinton. He was the guy. He was the next guy up. The other thing was that I was on Alex Stein's show last year with one of the Epstein victims, and she recounted how she was in South Africa, was introduced to Jeffrey Epstein by Bill Clinton, who called Jeffrey Epstein the King of America. So it's like, here's this scumbag, scam artist, Bill Clinton, who was best friends with Jeffrey Epstein, who was his, you know, best pal and most, you know, beloved client. He probably had the whole punch card, you know, whatever the special offer is, whatever the you know, mug club deal for Jeffrey Epstein's rape network happened to be. Bill Clinton was a premium subscriber. And then Donald Trump comes out and tries to downplay it and then starts attacking Thomas Massie. It's like, this is outrageous. This is ridiculous. And again, it's like, I don't know how you can complain about people talking about Israel so much when, like, that's what it all goes back to. That's who Jeffrey Epstein was working for. That's what Thomas Massie is standing up against. That's what all of this is about. So, you know, it's infuriating, and it should have never happened. And it's entirely Trump's fault because he was the guy exposing Jeffrey Epstein until this year, when I'm sure, you know, he determined it was either more convenient to use that information as leverage to try to get the ceasefire in Gaza. After all, we had J.D. Vance saying, and when asked about this, we had to use leverage to get the peace deal in Gaza. That could have been financial, that could have been economic or military leverage, or it could have been sexual blackmail leverage. We don't know. So maybe he's doing that, but I honestly don't know. I mean, Trump's always been an agent of chaos, but there's always been an underlying through line that you go, okay, I can see what he's trying to do. I can see what his intentions are. When it comes to Jeffrey Epstein, it is everything's out the window. Everything is reversed every 6 hours. Everything is a hoax until it's not. It's just kind of ridiculous. Yeah, Trump, this is like the perfect headline, right? Trump breaks silence on Epstein files to defend Bill Clinton. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why? What?
It's insanity. And then Bill Clinton's also put out a statement saying release all the files, and then he's also criticizing the DOJ under Trump, saying that it's politically motivated what they're doing right now and that they need to release everything because that clears him somehow, some way. We all know that's not the case, though. Or we all think, I should say, well, in my opinion, because you always have to say it like that. But the reality of it is Harrison is, I mean, they have been along this cover-up for Bill Clinton for quite some time now. I mean, obviously, the Monica Lewinsky stuff was just like the top of it. And nobody else wanted to dig into all the creepy things that this man was doing. And they just let that all go by and pass by. And everyone cheers for him when they see Bill Clinton in public. But this is a guy who should be ashamed to show his face in public.
Well, you know, there's an interesting twist to that. I mean, Monica Lewinsky was likely a honeypot operation herself. She was probably tied into the Epstein network, and she was probably placed in there to seduce Bill Clinton to get.
I don't think it takes much.
Yeah. It's,
just have a pulse.
Not exactly a difficult mission to be sent on.
Look at Hillary.
Mission impossible. You, a voluptuous young woman, are going to try to seduce Bill Clinton. Good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Well, we know this is politically motivated, right? Because the two things that we found so far that include President Trump's name came out in 2020. And this is like, if it wasn't such a serious topic, I'd be laughing right now because it's hard to have a straight face with this. Number one, this looks like this is the Southern District of New York, which as soon as you say that word or that you say that specifically, everyone's red flags go up. But they're talking about President Trump being on these flight logs on Epstein's private jet more than previously reported. And they're specifically putting this in there and saying just that, at least eight flights between 93 and 96. And then they even say that, you know, on some of these flights, his daughter, Tiffany, was on board, and so was Eric. And then they also say that in 93 that there was a flight where it was just the two of them, both Epstein and Trump. And then they say that there was another incident where there was three of them on board. We don't know who the third passenger is. It's then someone who's 20 years old. But then you turn to this, and we also just found this one as well. You know, Matt's been working really hard at pulling all this information together for us. There's an FBI intake form, which they always look at the file date. It's filed in 2020, of course, right? Mm. Right at the time when they were trying their very best to push him out of the election, of course. Maybe backup plan if they didn't have the election fraud down to a T. But they go into detail about how some cab driver, some limousine driver, I can't even speak today, apparently said that he overheard a phone call where Donald Trump had raped her along with Jeffrey Epstein.
Wait. Sorry, let me get this straight. So in 2020, a complaint was filed. When was this supposed to have taken place?
Let's see. This was taking place on Christmas Eve in 1999, or a day prior, was visiting his son, who he had, sorry, the ink on this was really bad, had with blank years prior, began talking to blank as she seemed to be acting strange and asked if he needed a ride home. They don't really have the best ink over at the FBI, apparently.
But regardless, you have...
They're taking this back to 95, though, yes.
Okay, so a complaint in 2020 about a conversation overheard by a limo driver in 1995. It's
correct.
Like, okay, bombshell, smoking gun here. We finally got him this time.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's 95, and then this was filed in 2020. So again, I mean, this is a complaint. Obviously, this didn't have much in the way of leverage on it because there was nothing here besides some guy overheard a conversation. But I mean, this is what they've been trying to throw his way. I don't know why he's still allowing this to happen. Just come out swing. Just say, hey, listen, there was a report that was made like in 2020, right by the election time, where they were obviously trying to take me out. It's politically motivated. Where just say it yourself. Why wait until the Epstein files dropped to let the American people know that this was done in the first place? If he would have controlled the narrative, he would have controlled all of this from day one.
You know, I keep seeing this with Trump's administration. They always wait until the story breaks and then they respond to it. Same thing happened with, and it's like extremely suspicious, right? You've got Steve Baker, which, you know, hope he's doing better.
Yeah, he's awake and he's speaking.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. I'm very suspicious of, you know, what happened to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he comes out with this thing about the gate of the woman who they think is the Capitol bomber. And then like a week later, they're like, oh, we found the Capitol bomber. Actually, it's this black guy over here. You're like, case closed. And it's like,
he's
all
autistic,
right.
And we have the body cam footage. He needs to be there's someone explaining to him, Harrison, that he's receiving a ticket because he drove too close to another vehicle that he crashed into. And he's really struggling to understand this. So this isn't someone who's a mastermind trying to take down the RNC and DNC. This is someone who is barely getting by, unfortunately, with developmental issues.
Right. There's a lot of reasons to be suspicious of that story, you know, not least of which is his mental competency. But the timing of it, it's like, okay, if you had just come out and made this arrest a month ago, it would look a hell of a lot less suspicious than right after the big expose about the Capitol police officer. Or, you know, they did it again. I'm blanking on when it was. Well, I mean, they do it with like Charlie Kirk and the investigation into the assassination. It's like they're constantly, you know, oh, you know what it was? It was actually the assassination in Butler. It was Tucker Carlson coming out with all that information about the shooter there. And
Thomas
then,
Crooks, yeah.
Yeah, and then the FBI comes out and goes, well, we've been doing this many interviews and we have this much information. It's like, well, okay, you've given us none of that. For the last several, you know, for the last year, we've had no updates, no press conferences, no nothing. So then independent investigators go out, research it, find it.
Yeah, Harrison, we got it just what Tucker did. We got the same document that Tucker was given. And it's all authentic. And in fact, Tucker tried reaching out, and so did I, for comment from the FBI. And they told Tucker Carlson, how do you know this is authentic? And they tried to challenge his work. And then I reached out to you for comments because I was told that this individual tried coming forward to give this crook's social media presence information to the FBI. And I was told that the FBI was unwilling to take it on. And I asked them about this and they ignored me. But then, in case you're wondering, shortly after it started going viral, the information that we had uncovered from this and started exposing, the FBI did put out a statement referring to us as false media reporting, even though we gave them the opportunity to speak out before it was released.
And that's, and see, this is the problem. It's like they're acting suspicious. Like, okay, if you have all this info, give it to us. But when you wait until it's exposed and then you come out and go, well, yeah, we've known this whole time. It's like, okay, you're lying. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. You're lying. So they should have come out and just released all this. The fact they had to make the bill go to a vote and had to, you know, pass a law through Congress. It's ridiculous. They should have just released all of this. They should have done it early on. And none of this would have been an issue. And that's why I say it's a, you know, problem entirely of Trump's making. I mean, you can go back. You can, I mean, there's the Internet Archive. There's, you know, you can go back in Google News. The Democrats pretended that the concept of elite pedophilia didn't exist for 10 years. They pretended that Jeffrey Epstein was a hoax because they were trying to protect Clinton. But they would go so far as to connect all claims of pedophilia or human trafficking to QAnon. And it was all BS. Like, they spent 10 years actually making it a lot easier for human traffickers. And the media companies who had the stories about Epstein spent 10 years crushing those stories, allowing the abuse to continue the entire time. And now they're going to come out and say, actually, you know, release the Epstein files. It's like we're an upside down nonsense Twilight Zone world. And it's because everybody's being dishonest all the time. If just be honest about it. We get it. We get it. There's a giant pedophile blackmail network that runs our country. We understand. We've known this for a while. You freaks go dress up in robes in the woods and pretend to burn a body into an owl god. Like, yes, we get it. You're all degenerate freaks. Like, this isn't a surprise. Give us the truth so we can replace you with people that are honest. It's all self-preservation at this point from the powers that be. I did not know the thing about the flight. So that is interesting.
Yeah.
I'll say it's not exactly condemnatory because, you know, Epstein wasn't caught officially until the early 2000s. So,
By the way, that's just an email from someone at the Southern District of New York.
So
this could potentially be that they maybe saw this coming and they wanted to create a FOIA trail. And if anyone were to request, this is what we'll give them.
Right.
And that email would be included. There's no document to actually back that up as of yet.
That is very interesting. He's listed as a passenger on at least 8 flights, but 93 and 96. I mean,
no one knew back then.
Yeah, nobody knew. I mean, he might have known. You also, I mean, there is this, there's not so many billionaires in the world, and all the billionaires know each other. Like, and Trump mentioned that, I think, in the clip we just watched, right? He's like, everybody knew this guy, everybody. And it's like, well, if you're in a community that has, you know, 2,000 people in the entire country, and you all share planes, and you all share private islands, like, I was never all that suspicious of Trump being like, yeah, a guy hitched a ride on his plane. That's what you do when you own planes. Like, okay, that makes sense to me. Yeah. It's the people like Bill Gates that go visit his island like 30 times. That to me is like the example I always use is, you know, my grandparents live in a small town in Colorado, and I know that place like the back of my hand. Like, I know all the little alleys, I know all the little trails, like, I know it really well. I haven't been there 30 times, right? Like, that would be me going twice a year for the last 15 years. It's so many times. So it's like stuff like that. It's like he was almost living on that island. You don't go somewhere 30 times and then go, I don't know, did I ever go there? Like, that stuff to me is ridiculous. And there's so much of that with so many other people. Donald Trump flying on the plane, supposedly, allegedly. It doesn't concern me that much. But, you know, Trump's behavior is inexplicable. So
we're still
uncovering this, I guess.
No, it makes it worse. It makes it worse. And I want to hear from Bill Gates' ex-wife, because I think that's absolutely egregious that she settled that divorce so quickly after alluding to that she knew a little bit more. But Harrison Smith, you do a great job over in War Room. Everyone, make sure you go tune into War Room. He misses you.
Please, I do.
Yes. Well, we appreciate you being here, Harrison. Thank you so much for jumping on with us.
This has been so fun. Thank you.
It's been a blast. It's been a blast. Folks at home, Alex is next on the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. There's more to discuss.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like 4. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong, you know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you who have never gotten a supplement, go to thealexshillerstore.com. Make the decision now. Get our Ultra Methylene Blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexshowstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at infowarsstore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key. You're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.